Did you know an Australian silent film called Those Who Love took more at the box office in 1926 than Charlie Chaplin's Gold Rush in its first week? Well, you're not alone if you've never heard of it or its creators, Australia's first female filmmaking team. Three sisters who helped shift our film industry's preoccupation with parochial bush stories to some more modern urban concerns. Writer Mandy Sayer has documented their story in a book called Those Dashing McDonough Sisters, because they were. Mandy Sayer, welcome to Life Matters.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, Phyllis, Isabel and Paulette, I'm very excited to learn more about them. What made you want to document their lives?
Well, I heard that their most famous feature, The Cheetahs, had just streamed at the London Film Festival in 2020. And I thought, why have I never heard of these sisters or their films? And I wanted to read a book about them and realised that one hadn't been written. And so I began researching their story and became so involved with them that I felt like I became a part of their lives for about 18 months. And it was a wonderful experience. Not only were they very talented and creative, they were real characters as well, and kept me amused endlessly.
They do sound pretty amazing for that time or any time. Tell us a bit about their family background. Did it prime them for a life in the arts?
Oh, it certainly did. They grew up in the theatre world. Their father was a surgeon and doctor who was in love with the theatre. He treated many people from the actors from J.C. Williamson's as they were touring.
Which is,
and
on Sunday what nights, was J.C. Williamson's?
Oh, sorry. He was an entrepreneur who toured international acts in Australia. And he imported such actors as Sarah Bernhardt. And but the father used to have Sunday night soirees in his home, and the sisters grew up listening to the best actors and actresses and opera singers of their time engaging with one another and performing in the living room. So they really did cut their teeth on theatre.
Yes, soirees, a real kind of bohemian flavour to the household. But
it was actually quite...
Go on.
They thought they were quite upper class. I mean, the father was friends with the Prime Minister and the Governor and that sort of thing. So they grew up in the lap of luxury, but after he died and left no will and with no assets, they actually went from the top of society basically down to being penniless, that the whole family did. And so they had an incredible life journey even before they began making films. All were orphaned by the time they were in their early 20s, and they had to raise their younger siblings. So it's a fascinating story leading up to their filmmaking career as well.
It sounds like they were very, very good at kind of scrabbling for money, and that they prioritised making films over, you know, doing something else with the money that they raised. That's really interesting, isn't it? Where do you think that drive came from for them to make films?
Well, I think it really came from the third sister, Paulette. She was fascinated with film of German expressionism, actually, and Hollywood melodrama. So she wanted to bring the focus away from the bush and the squatter son and the bush ranger to the city and to make something that's more sophisticated and urban-based and a female-centred film. So it's girl meets boy, girl loses boy, girl gets the boy back. So it was Paulette who really studied filmmaking in detail and who corralled the sisters into making the films, because Isabel was already an actress by this stage and she'd already appeared as a lead in a silent film, and Phyllis had a lot of experience on the theatre as a set designer. So they combined their talents and unified them into this amazing vision.
They do sound like they had the perfect skill set when you put them all together. What were they like as a trio? It sounds like they were very tight.
Oh, they were very, very close. Apparently one wouldn't even buy a comb without consulting the other two. They grew up in the same bedroom, even though they were in a big house. They preferred to live in one room together. They'd stay up all night discussing the latest film or play they'd seen and mocking the bad acting and directing. But they were close, but also they used to have spectacular fights when they were writing scripts particularly and on set. And so they never took it personally. It was always over aesthetics that they would argue. And so in one apartment building they lived in while they were making their film, The Cheetahs, that the neighbours thought the arguments were getting so out of hand that they were going to call the police because they thought someone was getting murdered upstairs.
Oh, dear.
So a very passionate, close relationship that they all adored one another. And in fact, the family still does. It's a very close family.
Now, when many women worked at that time, but in terms of following your passion or having a career, women's options were very constrained in the early part of the 20th century in Australia. How did becoming orphans affect the sisters in that way and their ability to follow what they wanted to do?
Well, I think they were very much like, well, both their parents were very stubborn and very strong, but I think those early losses imbued their storytelling with a kind of poignancy and depth that was lacking in Australian films, that there are death scenes in them that are incredibly moving, and even 100 years ago it was made, it can still make you weep. They were able to transform their difficulties and their sadnesses and their grief into something beautifully unique in cinema that hadn't been seen before, and I really admire that, because it seems to be qualities lacking in people today, is that kind of resilience, rather than sitting around nursing their trauma and their triggers, they got together and did something with it and made something positive out of it. And transformed Australian cinema at the same time.
It sounds like, from a practical point of view too, it almost removes some constraints. I mean, there were extra financial constraints, but also they didn't have relatives around going, shouldn't you be married by now?
This is the key, yes. Both their parents had died by the time that they made the films, but they did have an older aunt called Aunt Mary, who was Victorian and very traditional.
And Victorian historically, not just geographically.
No, I mean historically, yes. She was born in the late 1800s, and so I think she was a bit bewildered by what the sisters wanted to do, and there was possibly some split in the family because she moved out and took all her money with her and left the sisters on their own to run wild, which they did.
And they did make their films on quite tight budgets. It was fascinating to read some of the effects that had on life on the set. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, well, the life on the set was that they planned everything meticulously, and so they budgeted and they filmed in sequence to help with continuity, but they planned everything down to every last detail. So in some media reports, they've been portrayed as three society girls out for a bit of fun, but in fact, they were deadly serious and deadly organised, and they only used the best actors and crew. So they really did have ambitions, and in fact, at twice they were invited to Hollywood as a filmmaking team, but they had younger siblings they needed to raise and had to remain in Australia.
I love the story about how the one cameraman they could afford fell sick once. What did they do?
Well, that's right. In their first film, he fell sick, and they had to nurse him all night with Aspro and lemon drinks, and taking turns, the three of them, and nursing him. And the next day, because they wanted to keep on their schedule, they had to hold him up to the camera because he couldn't stand up while he was cranking the crank and filming the set.
Good Lord. I'm surprised they didn't just learn how to be a camera operator. Sounds very in character themselves. For these women. We're speaking about the dashing McDonough sisters, Phyllis, Paulette and Isabel, who made films in Australia in the 1920s in the teeth of quite severe opposition from the industry and many barriers. And Mandy Say has written a really interesting book about them that details many aspects of their life and gives you a real sense of what life would have been like at that time. Mandy, what was the reaction within the industry when these women fronted up and said, we make films?
Well, when they first wanted to make films, they did go to men in the industry for advice, and they were told literally to go home, little girls. So wow. They did go home, but they didn't remain little for long. They stuck to their guns. All their friends and family tried to dissuade them, but they wouldn't be dissuaded. And so when their first film was premiered, it was such a success that, made the governor cry for a start. And as you said, it gained more at the box office than Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush. So they really did shock a lot of people in the industry, some of whom wrote it off as a fluke that they were so successful. But when they came along with their second film, The Far Paradise, which is was recognised as even being even more superior to the first one, people started to realise what their intentions were and their seriousness and their excellent skills and abilities. So it, with the second film, that their public profile changed quite a bit and they gained a lot more respect.
They had a lot of bad luck though too, didn't they, with the kind of social and economic shifts that were happening?
Yes, they did. Well, not only were they women in a men's business, they were also hampered by the fact that Hollywood dominated Australian cinemas, and so probably about 95% of the product being shown in Australia was American. And it was a block booking system, so independent films made in Australia had a very hard time finding a distributor. So that was one problem. And when they did find a distributor, that the deal was so bad that they got very little of the profits. Then, of course, they hit the Depression, which was difficult, and also the Wall Street crash of the stock market and the introduction of talkie. So they battled all these fronts constantly. And but the products they came up with were extraordinary, despite the circumstances. But I think being three rather than one emboldened them in so many ways.
The advent of the talkies came at just the wrong time for their amazing little film, yes. The Cheaters, didn't it? Tell us a bit about The Cheaters and its trajectory through life.
Oh, well, it was a very difficult film for them to make because, as I said, they were halfway through making the silent version when talkies came in. They thought they'd proceed with a silent, which they did, and it is a brilliant film. Even 100 years later, it's recognised as one of the best silent films in the world. It was a crime caper inspired by Hollywood melodrama with terrific acting and photography.
And it wasn't just a femme fatale or a kind of weepy dame, was it? There were women in safe-cracking roles.
Yes, Isabel, the lead, she cracks safes, she brandishes a pistol. The female characters, their range was far wider and deeper than any previous characterisation. So, you know, they had a lot of challenges, but they had a great philosophy. They decided to banish the word no from their vocabulary. So that meant they could not give up, and they didn't. Sometimes that perseverance paid off. Occasionally they learned lessons from what they'd endured. But what impressed me mostly was their attitude towards life, which was confidence, resilience, and a kind of internal fortitude that sustained them throughout their lives. And they really inspired me as not just an author, as a woman, I have to say. They really emboldened me in many ways and in many ways have changed my life because I've spent so much time with them. I feel like they're my sisters now.
Wow, I just dipped into the book and you know, read about their lives, and they leapt off the page at me as these forthright personalities. Mm. And we should talk before we finish up, Mandy Sayer, about their final film, which was quite controversial. People weren't ready for that material, were they?
That's right. It's Australia's first anti-war film. It's been lost over time, but because it was an anti-war film called 2 Minute Silence, it was very confronting film about four characters on Armistice Day having flashbacks to the war. And Kenneth Slessor, the poet and reviewer at Smith's Weekly, gave it AAA rating, which didn't exist. It was off the charts. And he, being a former veteran, identified with the material. But the general public and, you know, the myopic critics of the time thought it was too depressing. It was released in 1934 in the middle of the Depression, when people wanted musicals and comedies and films that were sort of frothy to cheer them up. So the timing was not great for them, though Paulette, the director, said it was actually the best film she'd ever made.
Well, text messages just popped in, Mandy, say, where can these films be seen? Are they available to view?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book, because I'd like to see them released on a streaming service. At the moment, there are very bad copies on YouTube that you can see. One is only with Spanish subtitles, but that's my next project, is to see them released or publicly accessed somehow. Two films have been lost, but two survive.
And the sisters were recognised many years after they made the films with an AFI award and recently honoured at the London Film Festival, as you mentioned. What kind of recognition would you like to see, apart from, you know, us being able to see those films?
Well, they were actually born in on Macquarie Street across the road from the State Library in a home called Horbury Terrace. I would like to see a blue plaque outside there acknowledging their births there since they changed Australian cinema. And of course, I'd like people to buy the book and read about their story, because not only is it a book about film and history, but it's also a very inspiring story about three sisters who are so devoted to one another that they produce great works of art.
I'd like to see a statue of them all in their cloche hats and velvet capes cranking a camera.
And their dogs. Oh, great dog lovers.
Little 1920s dogs. Excellent. Yes, Mandy Sayer, thanks so much for giving us this vision of the dashing McDonough sisters. It's been lovely to learn about them.
Oh, thanks so much, Hilary.
Pleasure. Those Dashing McDonough Sisters, that's the title of the book, and it's very, very apt. Mandy Sayer is the writer, and it's out now.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.